Just one night, all we got. Just one night, all we got. Just one night. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Integrated Rhythm. Two swing dancing besties, that's Chisomo Selimani and myself, Bobby White, exploring race and other important topics in swing dancing and jazz music. Have we got an episode for you? We are joined by three amazing people. We have Gabby Cook, international swing dance instructor and owner-proprietor of Gatsby Entertainment here in New York City. It's a hire swing dancers to perform for various occasions type of company. And we have Laura Glace, international swing dance instructor and amazing YouTuber who divulges every secret she knows about swing dancing on her YouTube channel. And that is many, 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 many secrets. Check it out. They're amazing. And then finally, we have AJ Howard, international swing dancing instructor and incredible MC of events like International Lindy Hop Championships and many, many others. To put it short, we all often do gigs together for Gabby's company, Gatsby Entertainment. And well, we recently did this one gig and we wanted to tell Chisomo about it. So that's what we're about to do. Hope you enjoy.
Rhythm with Chisomo and Bobby.
Hey, everybody! We are here with Laura Glace, AJ Howard, Gabby Cook, and of course, Chisomo Selimani.
Yeah. Let's get it.
Have we got a story to tell y'all? We're going to let Gabby Cook begin.
Hey, everybody. Hey, everybody out there. My name's Gabby, and you don't know all the things I do. You probably know me from teaching swing dance and being part of the Lindy Hop scene. But another thing I do is that I have a dance company here in New York. Actually, I have two, but one of them is pointed at commercial work. So that would be like company events or private occasions, weddings and baby showers, and every once in a while we like get on planes and we perform at people's very fancy events. This is a project that I've been doing since 2015, very end of 2015. It's called Gatsby Entertainment, and I get to hire my good friends Bobby and Laura and AJ and many, many others in New York, and this has been a really fun and interesting project. About a year ago, so we're in October right now when we're recording this, October 2022, that's a silly sounding year, I got a inquiry by one of the producing parties that I sometimes work with. Actually, I had never booked a gig with them. They had asked me for proposals and I'd sent them, but we together had never sealed the deal and signed a contract. And then they reached out and they said, we got a gig for you, and it would involve 12 dancers, which is way more than the normal amount of dancers that I have on a gig, usually two or four dancers, 12 dancers, and we want to fly y'all out to North Carolina to dance at a private event. And I was like, that's crazy. Go home, you're drunk. Then after saying that, I sent them a proposal, and the proposal was like, I don't think this is going to happen. It wasn't bonkers. I wasn't going to retire off that bucks, but it was, you know, it was the kind of proposal that is what we describe in the biz as all inclusive. It was me accounting for 12 dancers and rehearsing 12 dancers and putting 12 dancers on airplanes and putting those 12 dancers in a hotel and whatever shenanigans may ensue on the days we're performing. So I sent it and then went to sleep and thought that will never happen. And to my deep, unending chagrin, they fired us. Also, am I allowed to swear? This was not the time to ask that.
Yes, you are. This reminds me, one of the pieces of advice Sylvia Sykes gave me, she was like, Bobby, never say no. Just tell them how much it'll take for you to do it.
Because you might be surprised. They might say yes.
That is exactly the attitude I took with this client. I mean, first off, let me just say, like, it's not like, hey, figure this out and send over a proposal. I mean, it's like, it's a anyone who's listening, who's been on a production project, who's planned a Lindy Hop workshop, who's planned or participated in the planning of their goddamn wedding, knows, like, this ain't no joke. I mean, just the booking of flights, sourcing of dancers. Are there 12 dancers in New York? I don't even know. So all of that was like a tremendous, for a podcast on producing, that's all we'd talk about for like the next hour, is how I crafted the proposal. But we're going to fly right through it. So I crafted it and I sent it and I had a conversation and I slowly started to get to know our point of contact on the producing party side, which is a person whose name I'm going to identify as Patty. That's not their real name, but that's the name we'll use for the purpose of this story. Patty is someone that I had some dialogue with in the past, and the yellow flag was raised all the way up, and the red flag was slowly being raised. I really wondered how this person was in the role they were in. They didn't seem particularly organized. They didn't seem particularly adept at the kind of instincts that like high volume event producers have, but who am I to say no? So I send a proposal, I have various conversations, and something like, I don't know, a couple weeks, couple months later, I get the green light that this thing is on. And that's when I put it on my calendar as this godforsaken Asheville event. And it's happening in a year.
So I just want to throw in here, I take people to Zambia, right? I take people from the United States of America to Africa, about 20 of them. That's a lot of bodies. 12 is 8 bodies shy. It's a lot of bodies. It's a lot of coordination, a lot of work. So you're saying this and I'm like, ha. Ah.
Are you implying that like you need a certain sense of organization in order to successfully accomplish this task?
Yes, I am implying all of that and more. Also, the listeners need to know that I'm coming in fresh. I don't know anything. I was not a part of this. So I am hearing all these things for the first time. So you have not heard my reaction because my microphone has been on mute. I want to hear Gabby say all the things, but I am shooketh right now. Do you have an adjective like to describe the way that you interacted with her?
Like,
was it spicy? Was it bland? Was it normal, neutral?
So what is event planning and what is event, you know, professional event production? It is, for anyone who's in the industry, it is about, first and foremost, organization. It is about schedules. It is about interdependent deadlines. It is about contracts. It is about clarity. And a big part of it, because it's not just a spreadsheet job, it's like an on the ground troops, like fallout men kind of a job. So it's about clarity and forward momentum and picking your battles. And I don't know, it's a lot of military analogies. That's what I do. That's what every band leader does. That's what every event producer, wedding planner does. And I'm used to that quality. When I did under our events person, I didn't get the sense that that was their strong suit. I did not get the sense that they would be crafting a spreadsheet with a clearly defined, this is when you show up, this is when we need you in position, this is when you perform. I didn't get that sense. I got the sense instead that two things were the case. One, that that work would, like, shit rolling downhill, fall onto my lap. And that, two, that this was going to be a just deal with it in the moment kind of a situation. It was not, we were not going to be going into this battle with a lot of, with a shield of protection from our producer. We were going in blind. The babysitter is asleep. So that is the strong impression that I got from this whole thing. And it set me into, you know, alternating sets of rage, which is which is smart and self-loving, and also a kind of wily sense of adventure, let's say that. What is adventure?
But I also just want to, like, I want to interject and be like, Gabby showed us a few of the texts between them, and like, Patty was like dismissive and kind of mean sometimes, and Gabby was just happy, professional, smiley face, double exclamation point, like a pro. I just want to take a moment to toot Gabby's horn and say that this lady is a pro. Yes? You'll like shit on her computer and she'll just like wipe it off and smile at you and thank you for the organic deposit. You know what I mean? Like
that was such a mom way of this person, chat, pulled down their pants, pooped on their computer, ran around the house,
not on the couch,
and yet
on the walls. Thank you for the organic deposit. I'm so glad your digestive system is going well. Like, I'm glad things are exiting. Wow.
Yeah.
I love how, thank you, Laura, for saying that, because I love how measured and thoughtful you are in talking about this, Gabby, because yeah, we can tell, we can see the pro still taking place here, and I appreciate it.
I'll say one more thing. Okay, like, I'm using a lot of words to say this woman's like horrible at her job and totally crazy and totally driving me crazy, right? Like, that's what we're doing. That's the act. But I will say one thing, and this is true of anyone who's been doing this kind of work for a long time, because, you know, it's not like you're, it's not anyone's first rodeo. So you end up being in dialogue with the proverbial shit on the keyboard, and you look at it and it looks at you and you think about the universe. And I will say this, that when you deal with it all the time, and when you deal with this like level of crazy, you eventually crave it. You're like, what? What wonders will fly out
like
of this
combat
person's mouth? Like Dog. Combat.
Gabby and I, like, training for Camp Hollywood, Wednesdays we would meet up like a little bit early, at just like before classes, and just to like train and do whatever we needed to do. And we would, the first half an hour, 45 minutes of our training was, so what's new with the gig? And Gabby filling me in on all of the fun new adventures that she has been on, through text communications and emails with, said client.
Oh my goodness.
It was honestly probably some of my favorite parts of training for Camp Hollywood, just listening to Gabby's fun conversations.
It was really exciting for me to have, you know, usually when we get a Gabby gig, we tend to call them sometimes. When we get a Gabby gig, you know, it's like a month out and it's going to be 2 hours at a New York bar or something like that.
Yeah.
And, to get like an email in March or whenever it was, that like, are you free October 18th or whatever it was? And to
for
be
North
like,
Carolina?
Yes. Like for the epic Gabby gig. That was exciting.
Can we
and then
pause?
To not hear about it at all.
Can we pause and actually, just because I don't think either maybe Chisomo does, but maybe Chisomo and audience, like, can you guys share? I mean, it doesn't need to be just Gabby gigs, but can you guys all like talk about, you know, some like highlights of like what chaos or what experiences you've had on other New York City gigs? Because being a working dancer in New York is not like being in San Antonio or DC or Sacramento.
No, it's super different. Like, my first gig in the city, I danced with Akemi Kinukawa, freaking rock star. We went to Bar Bez, this little tiny hole-in-the-wall bar in Brooklyn, which was like an hour and 20-minute train ride away from where I lived in Inwood. I get there, it was like 9 p.m., and we were supposed to be teaching a Charleston lesson, and there's chairs everywhere. The guy, the musician that hired us, was like, yeah, you guys are going to teach Charleston. And we're like, okay, cool. Sounds great. And there's the audience arrives that was here to see the band, had no clue we were teaching a lesson. And so we walk in, and they walk in, and like 20 minutes into the set, Art's like, okay, and here's Akemi and AJ. They're going to teach you some Charleston. And the bar goers are like, huh? Absolutely wild. We had two participants, and then the rest of them were just staring at Akemi and I for like half an hour teaching a lesson.
AJ, what was the lighting situation? Were you guys like well lit, lots of space?
No, bro. It's in the back of this hole in the wall bar, and like, and the crazy thing is, like, the floor is diagonal. It's like a 40-degree slant, dude. It's ridiculous. Like, there's no space to dance. We're right in front of the band. It was very, very fun. So that's a prime example of my first, like literal first gig in New York City. I got $40. It was great. And then was on the train for 2 hours back.
My first gig was the Nordstrom gig. And so my first gig was at this like super fancy bank, and you look up and there's this glittering ceiling, and it was like to honor the salespeople at this company. And we go out and we have three numbers that we're supposed to perform, and we learned them in 3 hours, like the day before or something like that. And it's a live band, really good band. A band mm-hmm. that I personally would just social dance to. I would love that, you know. And like for the first ever, supposed to like the band plays me like burst out, and like we're boom, torrent of swing outs. And as we burst out, waiters are walking across the dance floor with plates of steak. Just
yep.
And we're trying to like swing out around them. And for me, that was like, oh, this is what it
Welcome
is.
To New York.
Yeah,
I remember that gig that we had with. Laura and I were on it, and it was like a big time review show for, I think, a fundraiser or a bank company or something like that. And I don't know if you remember this, Laura, but we had to do air steps, and we had to dance really, really fast. And the act right before us involved something with balloons. So the stage was covered with like popped balloons and confetti, and it's carpet. And so we're supposed to have like the fun run out their entrance. And so during the fun run out their entrance, I'm like kicking balloons as hard as I can and like getting down and throwing confetti out of the way as much as possible before we like.
I gotta say, this is also my fault, because like if I was the one in charge of that gig, because you were on a different gig, Gabby. If Gabby were in charge, she would have been like, no, 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 we're not dancing on that. You sweep that before we go out there. Yeah, but I'm just like fast and loose, and I'm like, let's break our ankles, come on.
And just to give, I think we're also making an assumption that our listeners have an idea of like what a gig elsewhere would look like. Let me give you an idea of what a gig in Cleveland would be like, right? Mm-hmm. So a couple years ago, we were hired for a Comic-Con event, and so we show up, there's a green room, a space where we're waiting, there's a stage, with plenty of space, and then there's an audience, right? So
stop it.
Book shutty.
What the heck? They're gonna dance, and they're ready to appreciate your dancing.
And the audience is here to stare at you dancing.
And so, you know, like, it was Comic-Con, so there was natural chaos, there were naturally people moving around, but we had an audience. We had a time, we got on there, things came, you know. And so, and like my maybe worst experience, not worst, but my like most surprising experience was I happened to be at a Louis Prima Jr. concert, and an amazing international instructor who I love was hired to teach, and got there, saw that I was there, and was like, hey, you're teaching this lesson with me. And so I taught the lesson, but then there were people who came up and participated in the lesson. So it was spontaneous, but yet there was room, there was a stage, there was food being served, but the food and the plates and the people who were dancing were in two separate areas.
Space. Not all in one?
Not all in one. I wasn't dodging plates and waiters and all of that. Yeah. Right? I'm soft. Like the New York experience, you don't have a green room.
What's a green room?
Right. What's a green room?
Oh, you mean the bathroom?
Yeah, yeah. With the other six dancers.
You're like, huh?
Like the stage, what is that? Oh, the spot where you're standing in that moment. Right?
There was literally a like 3 by 3 foot green room changing area with 8 burlesque dancers changing at the same time as the dancers one time.
People have an idea of what it means to be hired in other places and in New York City. So Gabby, you're setting the background, right? You all are used to chaos.
And I'll say, I mean, sometimes I perform on a, sometimes a gig is performing at Carnegie Hall. I mean, also,
yeah.
Right. Sometimes I have an incredible stage with professional lighting and I'm at the Pantages Theater in some city in New Jersey or Long Island. And I have a large green room. Sometimes I have 2 empty hotel rooms that belong to only me, and my partner gets 2 empty hotel rooms as well. So it's not always like that. It's more like, well, first off, just to reflect on your experience. Yeah. Like your experience, you know, a gig is, let me say something just general. You know, a gig is good if when you tell your partner, friend, high school buddy about it later, it sounds like a dream. Like I was in this beautiful bar, but it was underground in Queens. And I was teaching a lesson with Sky Humphries. And we were teaching old people that were salespeople for a diamonds. And then Alan Cummings was there. Like if you, and it happened at 11 a.m. on a Tuesday. Like it sounds like a dream. It's a gig. That's what it's like. Because it is a combination of like, luxurious things, extremely humble things, and then there's no corollary with what it feels like. Sometimes you perform at the most prestigious, beautiful space, and they just make you feel like dog shit. And then sometimes you perform at the back of a restaurant for Abuelita's, you know, 86th birthday, and they treat you, and when you're here, your family, and you're hanging out till 1 a.m. doing family dances with everyone else. Like there's no corollary between the details of the gig and like what you take away from it, which I think becomes the capacity of the performer over time as they unravel their assumptions about what all of it ever means. You know, I'm performing at this big place and that must be good. I'm performing at this little place for no money. That must mean nothing. Like what really happens is you get shaken up like a snow globe over many years, and it all becomes some version of either joyful or interesting or character building. And you're like, boy, do I have a story for you. So I think that's just worth saying. Let's go back to this gig. So, okay, great. So I, unfortunately, a great tragedy to me and my people, book this gig. And I am beginning to understand how alone and bespoke this gig will be. And so I start to go through the labor of actually putting it in motion. And there's a lot of things to say here about costume planning strategy, which anyone who does that kind of a thing will know that could take the entirety of the time that we have, because that is its own mountain to climb. How do you dress all these people? What do you already have in the coffers? What will look good? Also casting, who will be available? How much time do they need? Can I bring anyone from out of town? If the gig is happening in New York, we don't need New Yorkers. But I ultimately resolved to make it a New York-based gig so we can all have rehearsal together, because with 12 dancers, 2 things matter, which is blocking or formations in like Lindy Hop parlance, and then aerials, of course. Now, I will say that there's 1 set of dancers, Jennifer Jones and Brian Lawton, who did not have any rehearsal together. And when I looked at them and said, hey, can you guys do it in around the back? They're like, oh, absolutely. Because both of them are so talented, they could both do an in around the back with a folding chair. So shout out to the kind of people that I am lucky enough to get to dance with. Let me tell you about the dancers that I had on the gig. It was the very sexy people here on this call. It was Laura and Bobby and AJ. It was also Rachel McMullen, Jennifer Jones, who I mentioned has superpowers. Sam Siegel, who took a very important Fergie solo. Adrian Weidert. Brian Lawton, who also dances with Folding Chair. Rafal Pustelny, my longtime gig partner of many years. Milo Sadel, who has been a scene organizer here in New York for a long time. And new to the scene, Spency Spice, Spencer Pond, who I think is newest to the dance, but has been gigging his ass off. And also comes from, like a lot of New York dancers, comes from a robust dance background. Actually, many of the dancers that I just named come from a robust dance resume background, spanning lots of different kinds of commercial work, doing movies and Broadway projects and TV and many of the kinds of projects that we described on big stages and little. And because of that, everybody is super smart about knowing how to be backstage, what to pack, how to learn choreography quickly. Can I actually just pause and just do a little love letter to these 11 people? The thing that makes New York amazing, and I think this is also true, I know this is also true of many other cities, including Los Angeles, including New Orleans, including any city where someone is organizing gigs, is dancers are, of course, are like, you know, brilliant creators of movement, and they've worked on themselves. And they have all the skills that go with being great gigging dancers. What are those skills? Learning choreography quickly, learning how to be backstage, learning how to be respectful and discreet, but friendly and candid, learning how to make the most of an awkward or weird situation, especially when you're, like Bobby said, stuffed into a tiny room with a bunch of other performers. This is a skill that just growing up on the social dance floor will not teach you. And so every one of these 11 dancers has crafted themselves through pain and suffering to be smart and reliable and brilliant. And this gig was only possible because of all of the time everybody's invested in themselves. End of that. What do you guys think about all that?
Well, you know, when I got the email for the end, you know, for like, hey, are you available this time? You know, you do, or when you get the confirmation, like, hey, the gig's on, you know, you go through the emails and see who all's there. And it just seemed like the perfect heist movie for New York dancers. It's like, we got the whole gang together. I mean, just to see such a talented lineup of dancers on there, and also people that you would have a really fun, you know, you're going to have a fun time with, being on a plane, being in a van, being in a hotel room, being in 8 hours of rehearsal with no breaks time. Like, you know that those are the kind of people that you're going to, like, really enjoy the experience with.
A long time ago, I was chatting backstage with one of the a member of the Hot Shots, the Swedish Hot Shots, and we were talking about the paradox of auditions. Because on one hand, auditions should only be about one thing, which is danceability, or maybe professional attitude and danceability. But this hotshot and I were talking about, like, well, that's true, but you can always learn to be a better dancer, like, over time. Like, this person was saying to me, I kind of want to just hire people that are going to have a good attitude after we've been traveling all day, and then we finally arrive somewhere, and we're looking for food, and the streets of Istanbul are completely empty and there's nowhere to get food. Like, just a nice, resilient person who keeps, like, a cool demeanor in the face of, like, adversity. Like, that's, I mean, having, like, a great dancer who freaks out in those situations, gosh, that's, I mean, in a way, the job is what you do on stage, but most of the job is waking up at 4:15 to get on your, to make your, you know, 5 a.m., you know, call at LaGuardia and the rest of it. So I don't know. What's everybody else's experience with, like, this kind of thing? I mean, I know we're here to talk about the gig, but I can't help but say that, like, you guys have been gradually learning how to be part of this environment from me and from everybody else and from yourselves.
It's also like the for the curious listeners at home, which like maybe you do know, but like getting up at 4:45 to make your flight is very similar to being a Lindy Hop instructor as well. You know what I mean? Like if you're a gigger at any capacity, a lot of your life is going to be waking up too early to get to the gig, getting ready for the gig, a little bit of dancing, leaving the gig, getting yourself waking up early again. You know what I mean? Like that whole process, like if you want to be able to do this life, a sense of humor and an ability to roll with punches, I feel like is just, that's the most important tool you have in your tool belt, you know? And I don't know if we want to roll forward, but to piggyback on what Bobby was saying about 8 hours of rehearsal with no break. Speaking of 8 hours of rehearsal with no break, we wake up super early. We make it to the airport. We got a long ass layover in DC. We make it over to, and everything, things aren't going spectacularly wrong, but like you guys have flown. You know they're not going well. You know that we're on the tarmac for an extra hour. You know that rehearsal begins as soon as we landed anyway. And so we're like, boom, getting in the rental van, going over to the grocery store. Bam, we have 15 minutes. Move, 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 move. So we buy all of our supplies. We come in, go over to the hotel. We check in. They were fast at checking us in. They were professional.
I was
We throw
so
our stuff
amazed.
Into the hotel room and we make it over to the place.
So then, amazed that 12 dancers were able to get grocery shopping as fast as they did and get into and out of a hotel as fast as they did.
Yeah. We throw all our stuff into the hotel room. We make it over to like a big, beautiful mansion, which is where the gig is. Gorgeous mansion. And they feed us. And then we proceed. I'm expecting like we get there at 4 or something. And then we're supposed to finish. We get there at 5. And then we were supposed to rehearse until 11. All right. It's a long time. I've expected a lot of just waiting around. You know, that's what a lot of this stuff is. When you're in swing out, sometimes you're on and sometimes you're just like waiting for other people to do their stuff. Waiting is part of it. I'm expecting a lot of waiting. There's no waiting. All the time. Gabby had to be like, hey, we need a 15-minute break. Is that okay? And they're like, I don't know. And she's like, we need a 15-minute break. And it's not all like hard dancing. Speaking of hard dancing, like you did let us know early on, like, yes, we're doing air steps. They're going to be little air steps because we're dancing on pavement. Because of course we are. Of course we're dancing on pavement. That's an important part of it. So we're not all, like most of the rehearsal isn't the stuff that Gabby taught us in New York. It's not the thing that in my mind we were hired to do. It's like orb rehearsal.
wait. Yeah. That's...
let's talk about
I'm like, that was long.
So what was, okay. So Laura, who's brilliant and was like, let's just tell them what it was. Okay. So what ended up being, what was the ask? The ask was perform to everybody's favorite authentic Lindy Hop song, Little Party Never Killed Nobody, from the Great Gatsby movie, directed by Baz Luhrmann, recorded by the Black Eyed Peas. Obviously.
If we wait just a second, here's a little clue.
No.
Okay.
Trauma.
Oh, man.
Listen.
I ain't got time for you, baby. Either you're mine or you're not. Make up your mind, sweet baby.
We're not dancing to
authentic.
This part.
I don't even know this part exists right in the song.
This is
rhythm
the drop.
Like,
really?
I don't even know the part of the song we're dancing to because Gabby played it in rehearsal.
So we gonna dance until we drop,
Yep.
It's more an ode to Count Basie style than Benny Goodman style, but on the whole, like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. No cap, dude. When that song came out, like, I was in like I don't know high school or something. And that was my freaking jam. But thank you for that, Bobby. This will be stuck in my head for another 2 weeks.
We finally got it out, and he pulls you right back in.
That was rude, but I appreciate you.
So the overall thing they requested of us ended up being, in the evening, we were waiters that would participate with an interactive light and orb projection show. And I know I see you, Chisomo. Mm-hmm. And we would encounter the guests of this event and hand them on trays their placards for where they were sitting. So that was instance number one. Then, run into the night. Instance number two was a performance of Little Party, Never Killed Nobody, swing classic from the 30s. That was to be performed in front of the Biltmore Mansion outside in the pitch black darkness. Was it dark for the audience? No, because there was an industry grade projection mapping on the building that rivaled like a New Year's Eve show. And it had all sorts of animations that correlated with the song. We would perform as tiny little Lego people in front of this enormous projection. Then, after the show went really well, we would go with the audience and bring them back to the dining tent where they would be greeted by a beautiful, lanky champagne girl standing at the top of a tower, bequeathed in gold, handing out champagne. And then they would go into the speakeasy where, surprise, there was a swing dance couple dancing. And then after the confetti cannon went off, they were joined by all their friends and everybody was swing dancing. So that was the bill of services. Four events, butlers, performance, champagne girl, and a big party at the end of the night. Early in the process, so to AJ's point about getting together and debriefing him on all the chaos that had happened that week, I was like, AJ, there's a Will.i.am solo. You're definitely taking a Will.i.am solo.
Like, of course.
Now, before we get into, is it a race thing? Before we get into that,
right.
Let it be. I was like, one, white AJ definitely would be Will.i.am. So one, that's your spirit. Two, AJ had already been cast on a 1950s gig as, of course, Elvis. So mm-hmm. we had another gig like a year previous where we needed, you know, since my baby left me. Like, we had that moment. I was like, AJ, you know you're walking out there with aviators being 100%. The sex symbol that changed America forever. So that is a well-trod path.
So as we've talked about, we're dancing on blacktop. Little Party Never Killed Nobody. Gabby mentioned that she had aviators for AJ.
So a few weeks before the billboard, Gabby sends us this link, this email link, that's like, choose a size on this butler costume. And I look up on it's Amazon.com. It's $40. And there are four sizes for every single body type in the world. Mm-hmm. And my body type,
like a nice looking tuxedo.
Mine is a medium. I am a 6'2", 190-pound dude, and mine is the second smallest or whatever. Like,
Yeah.
And my pant size, I remember my pant size was like size 32 to 46 or something like that. Like, it was such an enormous size that could only be accomplished by impressive use of elasticity.
So we were all like guessing, like, is it like a trash bag that ties in the back? Like, how are they accomplishing this size? We don't know.
I'm pretty sure that I follow.
Do this magic. Rob was like an extra small.
Yeah, he put in the email. He's like, is anybody else an extra small? I'm like.
So we ordered like, 11 extra smalls and two mediums.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we get there. So for Chisomo's, for everyone. So Friday is, arrive at LaGuardia at 5 a.m., get on a flight, get on another flight, bus, get in the 15-passenger van that soccer dad, early on, I was like, AJ, are you going to be our driver? And he said, hell the hell, yes,
absolutely.
I am.
I got you, Daddy.
So he figures out this vehicle. We get the hell in this vehicle.
we go to the grocery store before I even let anyone out of the van. I'm like, you only have 15 minutes. You got to be back in the van with your snacks for the weekend because this is it. Because by the time we're done with rehearsal, it'll be 11:30 and I think Asheville is closed. So everyone goes 15 minute grocery sweep. Everyone makes it out. It's a great time. We get in the van. We go to the hotel. We check into the hotel, as Bobby pointed out. Then we go to the hotel. Then we get to the venue. Then we eat the food.
We met the person that was helping us. So Gabby met up with her and they talked about how we were going to run rehearsals and stuff while we had like a little snack before. And it felt like we were sitting in this like courtyard. It felt, if you guys seen Shrek, like it felt like we like walked into Duloc. Like I was waiting for the little like do 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 do, like the song to start playing while we were eating food. It was hilarious.
And now it is time to get out of your clothing and into these Ziploc bags called butler costumes on the earth.
So beside the Biltmore is this big ass reception white tent, and that's where the main party is going to be. And behind that is the green room, changing room, food room, props room, everything room. And so they walk us
Gabby
back there.
Said
and
it
like,
was giving manger because it did not have a floor. It was just like dirt.
Oh, yeah. No, for real.
And they tell us to try on our butler outfits. And goddamn, that thing didn't actually fit pretty well.
Listen.
Bobby's pretty well. If it didn't, Bob and Gabby and I look like total foxes, can I say, right? Girl, you know you've never looked hotter, all right?
Oh,
never
dude, it was
felt
like...
hotter. Wish I could have my wedding again and wear that costume instead. On the ground, like it's time for you to change in front of your friends. You're the boys and the girls and the everybody else
in a manger.
Yep. Right now, are you wearing a thong? I don't care, but we're gonna find out
cold.
Right now.
Yeah. I'm like standing on my shoes so that I don't get like dirt on my shit.
Yeah, everybody's standing on their shoes. Yeah.
And so now we have done that, and it is time to practice the first of the four things that we have to do. The orb business. Now, anyone who's been at a technical rehearsal knows that anytime light, sound, stage magic, pyrotechnics is involved, that you're basically living on the cumulative time. You're working at the pace of the slowest party. And by slow, we don't mean that anyone's being unprofessional. There's a lot of preparation. There's so many hydraulic cherry pickers. So there are a lot of people in front of the light board, in front of the soundboard, and we are just hanging out and we are told, you get down over there. And at some point, the two production people say, Gabby, who are your three shortest girls? And I say, Gabby, because there are no show girls on this gig other than me. And I end up texting to the group, who are the shortest people? And someone texts back, Laura and Jennifer, who are obviously solid mediums. And I write back, have I got a job for you? And the three of us are now cast as the only interactive performers who are set to walk underneath, like imagine, like if you went to a boxing gym, imagine a speed bag. Imagine the way it dangles in the air at about face height. Now imagine it being set on a like a hydraulic, you know, like a mechanical
string
pulley, wherein it could be raised and lifted with music. That's
in coordination with 45 other speed bags. That are glowing so orange and other
that
colors.
That is what the fuck. That's up. That's what's up. Literally. So I'm told like we're going to walk under it at a specific time. Now, looking at it from the audience point of view, it looks like a calm wave. It's very cool. AJ pointed out that it's giving drone show. Very cool. The first time the shorties are looking at this from the side, it is a windy day. And the three of us are like, we're going to get hit in the face.
Like multiple times.
But fortunately, we're wearing masks and bowler hats. So if
that's
it hits
right.
us, it's just like ping, ping. So like
where did those come from?
So when we got to our butler costumes, there's little Ziploc baggies on each costume. And lo and behold, inside is first off a derby hat. And then there's a green mask, like a faceless mouthless or like a calm mouth or no mouth
no,
kind of
no
green
mouth.
No, it's just like
it's supposed
and
to
so,
be creepy
dog and it's and definitely so, for children bro like people put it on their faces like dude's beards and like chins are hanging out by like an inch and a half.
I feel like the shorties that fit our faces okay, but we look over at Bobby and he's got this like little face on top of his face. And yep. also, like when Gabby first told us back in New York that we were going to wear these masks, she said that they were, what was it? What was the name of the TV show where everybody's dying all the time?
Well, oh, Squid Game.
Oh, Squid Game.
Oh, yeah.
Squid Game masks. Yeah. Yeah. And so I have hypothesized that they're actually bringing us out to hunt us for sport.
Oh, bro. It was giving Get Out.
Yeah, which we are available for if the price is right.
AJ, I thought, had the funny. I mean, we were all competing for funniest jokes. I mean, we were the, like, we were full-blown writer's room. Wish.com, Jabberwockies.
Yep.
I was just saying, it's giving me Jabberwocky. I was hoping that it would be less deadly than Squid Game.
Jitterwocky.
It turned out to be. We made it.
Yeah, like swing
down. My favorite joke, I thought, was the first time I put it on and I showed AJ, and AJ was like, you look like Dwight from The Office. Which is just the funniest shit that I had conceived of. If you've seen the episode, the CPR episode, it's when, when Dwight cuts the face off the CPR dummy and wears it on his own a la Hannibal Lecter. Yeah, that's what we look like. 12 of your favorite dancers from New York City looking like absolute psychopaths.
And $40 costumes from Amazon.
A lot of really attractive people. They're dancers from New York City, and we're going to put them in big trash bags with masks. Yes. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Nailed it.
Who was the first person to say ghost butlers?
That was our
first
Jen.
Jen.
So Jen says ghost butlers, and then so the rest of the night is dun dun. Who's gonna call? Dun, 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 dun. Anyway, continue, please.
Yeah. So here's what happens. So we are in rehearsal for Orbs, and we are instructed to get on the ground for all of the followers, and the leaders are instructed to go outside and plan their entrances. We are told that at a certain time, when the lights turn orange, that it is our time to get up and do our interactive choreography with the Orbs. We quietly go underneath the tables and we do what we're supposed to do. The Orbs turn orange. We get up. We are immediately told we are wrong. We are wrong right away. It is suggested that perhaps the Orbs are red. And we actually end up having to go through the entire light show to find out that the Orbs turn orange 5 times before we are supposed to get up. So that is like the beginning of what will be the flavor of the relationship between the producing party and the dancers, which is they will give us specific information. We will act on that specific information and we will be told we are immediately wrong and so stupid and we should go home. Why would we ever do that? So we end up finally figuring out slowly what we are supposed to do. Too fast, too slow, just right, very Goldilocks. And now we have finally gotten maybe 2 hours deep into what should have been a 45-minute rehearsal, 2 hours deep into the Orb rehearsal. And it is now time to rehearse on Friday our actual dance performance, the thing that we're most excited to do. Except it is pitch black because we are at America's largest estate, which is surrounded by nature, meaning there is not one light from one other building. We are at like the bottom of a basin of just nature. It is pitch black out into the sky, and it is, of course, raining. It's raining and it's like lightly raining. And I say to the dancers, I'm like, some of the dancers are obviously like, no thanks. And other dancers who are more intrepid are like, oh, no worries. It's not like raining real heavy. But I say to everyone, two things are true. One, for the time that it's raining outside, that water will collect on our clothing. So even if you're not cold now, you will be cold later. And two, it will make the ground wet and we will slip. So I would suggest that we create something like a poncho. At that moment, Bobby, ready for anything, takes
dude just came
poncho
prepared
out of his bag, humiliating the rest of us and proving his greatness, which we all agree in and endorse at this moment. What is the solution proposed by the producing committee is that that plastic needs to be found. It's the kind of plastic that would go over a stack of chairs. And so now we are pulling plastic sheeting off of chairs and we are adorning dancers with a big knot on their top and they are ripping holes
for their face, and we're going out like Cousin It into the darkness.
They're like,
Jen
is
like putting it on us.
Tall.
It's just like, don't breathe for a couple seconds. And they're just like earthing you from this fucking plastic, dude. It was great. It was perfect. It was exactly what it needed to be. And then we just have like this random ass long plastic cape that's just dragging on the ground while we're trying to block outside.
So I'd like to hear from all y'all now that we've kind of laid out the schedule of events.
We're dancing at like 10 o'clock at night. It's pitch black. Pitch black. We're in front of this huge mansion. The mansion is so big. It's this big. We're this big. And so, like, you kind of have to have, like, a sophisticated eye to notice we're doing anything down here, because projected on the face of the mansion is a laser show.
It's like
right?
Augmented reality. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're dancing in the pitch black with lasers shooting into our eyes. So AJ's like, I don't think we're going to do the aviators for this projection.
I'm like, bro, I already can't see shit. What are you talking about? I want to wear sunglasses. I'm blind as hell.
Oh, what about the cars?
Oh my god, dude. So, yeah, that was funny. So, the way that the blocking is supposed to go is like the follows are supposed to run out and they're going to do a bunch of solo dancing by themselves. Whoop, 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 whoop. It's great. It's having a good time. The leads, Biltmore State, the way it's set up, there's a big long driveway with like two sides, and in the middle, there's like a big fountain and some grass. Tell me
this
about
will be important later.
Yes, yes. Big long driveway, two sides, grass in the middle, and then a big fountain where the projection's at. And then the Biltmore State's in the front. And so in between where the grass is at and the Biltmore is where we're supposed to be performing. And so the followers are there in the center in between that on the pavement, which is the size of a fucking parking lot. It's massive. And leaders are going to be coming in vehicles, old cars from either side of the follows.
Known for their dependency, known for their ability to start, you know, consistently and drive consistently and...
I know, Dennis. That was me. We had the same thing. I'm like, what the crap? So we're not driving, thankfully. But we're supposed to have people driving us. And so we get there. We're doing this rehearsal. Come to find out, there's one car, not two. The other guy couldn't make it. So the side that Bobby and I are supposed to be on, he's just not here today. So no big. It'll be cool. He'll figure it out tomorrow, hopefully. And so the four guys, it was like that are on the other side get practice a couple of times. And so one of the last times, Brian had a really good idea and was like, yo, we should let AJ and Bobby go just so they have the experience of getting out of the car in time with the music to go meet up with the freaking their partners and what that's supposed to feel like.
What he didn't tell us is that we would be high on gas fumes from the car. And the car has like... You know, eight levels of steps to get up into it and out of it, and like the wooden door, and it only opens in a very specific way.
It was an UAJ that said, like, the dude got the call about the car, and it hasn't turned on in 5 years. So he started fixing it 2 weeks ago, and
he didn't finish.
Ran out of time.
Yep, that was while we were in the car. He told us that.
So he couldn't turn on the headlights because that would kill the battery.
Literally, he tried. I was like, you should turn them on. And he did, and the car goes, blub, 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 blub. And he's like, yep, nope, we're not doing that. This guy cannot drive a manual transmission car, by the way. Like, listen, man, this old car's for a while. It's cool. But, like he's turning around, and the car's like, hey. We got out. We're like, Bobby and I, we make the thing, it happens, it's whatever. We made it to the mark. And I told the group, I'm like, guys, one of two things is going to happen tomorrow. Either A, it's going to stall out and the leads are not going to make it because they're going to have to sprint to the follows, or B, the shit's going to explode because this car is not ready.
Yeah. And like,
wasn't
the fact
ready.
That, like,
she wasn't ready. Yeah, 100%.
I think Laura had the best summary of, okay, so now, Chisomo, you've heard like all of the things separately, but I think Laura really summed up the mood of the circumstance of the evening, which was
we're dancing on blacktop in the dark, in the rain, with lasers shooting at our eyes.
Can I ask a question?
Are you wearing
these masks? Where
we took them off.
Okay.
Thankfully
for the orbs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, hypothetically, we're in our fantastic flapper outfits. The guys are in their own clothes that fit them. You know what I mean? Like, we're dressed comparatively way more normal.
Yeah. But also, yeah, dude, like, I'm wearing this bag. I can't see shit. I have no peripherals. Like, we're supposed to be doing blocking. I can't see anything. A, it's dark. B, there's light shooting at me. And C, I have a plastic bag on. So, like, I'm just trying to do the choreo in the dark. It was an absolute mess, but like we held
really
it down.
We were not able to block too much of anything.
We nailed it. We got what we needed to do. They had like some duct tape that they were putting down to like find a center mark and like to find the front side. In the rain. Yeah. So they're going to put duct tape down on wet ass pavement and it's in the puddle. And so like we're dancing over it. And after we get done with one run, it's 40 feet over to the left.
Mm-hmm. Can I also say that the follows are returning to our theme? Like at the beginning of this entire thing, what we've learned is the guests are still in that party tent. And so we are ready for them to come out and take a seat on the lawn so they can watch the amazing show. The leads are in the cars ready to like come out. The follows, are they inside the Biltmore where they could burst out of the big doors? No, we're hiding. There are bushes on either side of those big doors.
Big ass bushes.
And we're hiding behind the bushes. You have three on one side and three on the other side. Yes?
To me, it reminded
me
of...
We're hiding behind the bushes, the dark night, the cold,
in the
trying not to be seen in our huge, glittery, glittery outfits, trying not to be seen.
There is this episode of this episode of Arrested Development where like Ben Stiller plays Tony Wonder, this great magician, and these people are in this bar and someone says Tony Wonder and all of a sudden there's a flash and smoke and he appears and the guy's like, man, such an incredible magician. How did he do that? And then it like cuts to like 3 hours earlier when he's waiting in the dumb waiter, like almost against it, waiting for his name to be heard so he can do the thing. And so like people see these wonderful flappers just emerge out of nowhere dancing. What they don't realize is they were squatting in the bushes for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's pretty funny.
So that's the rehearsal day.
That's
we
Friday.
Do the orcs,
yeah.
We do the costumes, we do the show. I'm, you know, everybody is having such a good attitude. The boys encounter a lot of petrol fumes and the day is finally over. We finally, AJ is so kind as to drive us, you know, 20 minutes from the house to the entrance of the Biltmore Estate.
Dark.
Surveying the many lagoons. And then we are finally at the hotel. And it is close to midnight. And so the next day, it is the day of the show. So the first thing that we had to do is one thing that was obvious is that we couldn't have rehearsal in the rain. We couldn't, like, go... First of all, this tune is 260, and with like, you know, flying swing outs, we're not doing that at 11 o'clock at night in the rain and the dark. So we resolved to have rehearsal on Saturday, the day of the performance, in the parking lot, of course, in the parking lot of the Holiday Inn Express. We have a great rehearsal. We go over everything in a lot of detail, and we resolve, just like when you bring a team to ILHC, to set all of the spacing relative, like you're 2 feet away from Samantha or you're 5 feet away from Brian, because we've just got to be a little pod and we've just got to go on our own relative spacing, which we do. And everyone is so great. We even have part of the rehearsal where we were facing a tree and Bobby and Milo lift Samantha high into the air and lift her down, but not without accidentally, maybe the tree is part of Sam's landing. The solution to this, of course, AJ punches the tree because that's how we fix that problem. I love everybody and everybody has had such a good, funny attitude. So it is time to now get your costumes and get into the car. And the day is going to actually go how it's going to go, because we've rehearsed, we've done the things, we have the costumes, everything is purchased, everything is bought, and it's just going to go how it's going to go. The one thing we weren't quite ready for is this aggressive whipping winds that made the scene feel like we were in the middle of a tornado. The tent we're in has a metal frame and like an industrial plastic sheeting, but it is like the earth is trying to pull this tent from the ground.
Literally.
And it is constant anxiety.
Yeah.
And I'll just say one final thing to round out this description. What it is doing, it is lifting and dropping down the roof of this tent, which is splashing gallons and gallons of water from the previous day's rain near and onto the generator.
Super choice.
Yeah, I might be wrong about this too, but like, so this is a private party. That's, oh, we forgot another thing too. Oh my gosh. If we can like go back to, we're ghost butlers. We're ghost butlers. The follows are hiding behind / underneath a table, and the leaders are outside waiting to be creepy with our trays and everything like that, and our glowing cubes and our masks. And so the follows look up, and there's this huge wall made out of a curtain, and we can see the projection on that wall, and the projection is talking about the creepy, horrible story of F. Scott Fitzgerald and Zelda Fitzgerald. And they like fall in love, but then Scott is plagued by demons and the drink, and Zelda plunges into madness, and the wedge between them deepens, and Zelda checks herself into an insane asylum, and a vengeful nurse locks all the patients in their rooms and burns the hospital down. Happy 25th anniversary! And we're just like, what? And that's why creepy. Oh, by the way, the music to the projection is a remix of the opera portion of Gangster's Paradise, which makes a lot of sense, I think. Yeah, Bobby.
Which then moves into Toxic by Britney Spears, but not the original.
No,
a slower, creepier version. And it's not Britney Spears. It's a person who's trying to sound, if I recall correctly, both younger and more sexy, which is also kind of scary.
I think we were called like off-brand Bjork was a particular remix. Toxic. Yeah, so that's...
And Toxic, that the perfect was just message.
It was rough. So,
and like we come out and we're talking about like this crazy story. Why are they doing this for their 25th anniversary? And the leads are like, what are you talking about? And we're like, oh, you guys, let me tell you about the projection that you missed because you were outside. Because
we've been outside of this building.
You haven't.
We've been outside.
Holding.
We've got our metal trays that have the little cards on them for people to find their places. And we're creepy butlers. And we've got the glowing lights. And we're in, 30 mile per hour winds. And we're trying to like
hold
these
tickets
around the tent to get into the thing. And so like we've all devised our various ways. We've got our tickets under the thing, under our boater hats. So we're carrying it like this, running through the wind. And then we have these white gloves that are cotton, but they don't grip very well. So we're in the dark trying to like put our cards in the right place on the thing, but they're all slipping and stuff. And then it's almost our cue. And then we walk out and we'd be creepy.
Yeah, it was super tight.
That was kind of a cool idea, though. Like all the cards had like an animal, like a stegosaurus and a dog,
a hippo,
and a blue whale, a hippo. You know, and those went along with like the place settings were super nice. They were like pewter animals, and so that you matched them up. You know, so you're supposed to like they pick out a card, and then we just like gesture creepily, and a couple of people were like, "What do we do?" And we're like, "We're not allowed to talk. Just." Go figure it out.
Oh yeah. Each of our lights on the little thing said take one per couple. And so check this is hilarious. So there's 160 guests at this place. Right, this is a little easy, man. So like there's 12 dancers, each person on their thing had like 3 or 4 little cards. Some people had 5, but the average is 4. So 160 each couple, that means there's 80. Cool. So let's just say each dancer had 5. 12 times 5, that's 60. That means 20 couples didn't get cards. So what are we supposed to do with all these extra humans? That's a wonderful question. I don't know. Not my circus, not my monkey.
Not our problem, yeah.
But, like, we handed out our 3 or 4 little tickets to the couples and then peaced out as ghost butlers. And so the people that don't have shit are just like, Gabby, did you get a call? I think you're like asking about did we hand out all of our things?
I think Jen.
Yeah, they're like,
call.
Oh, this didn't work perfectly. I'm like, you don't fucking say.
You guys can't do math. I was like, hello?
Let me just jump in and say, me just say how the event went. How did the event go on the day of after crazy preparation day, crazy logistics? When it all starts and it's all time for us to get in costume and makeup and this and the other, the roller coaster just goes.
we just smoothly transition from one event smoothly into the next, smoothly into the next. And it's time for the boys to get in cars, and it's time for the girls to get behind the giant potted plant topiary, and it's cold as shit, and the weather is still really windy, but the guests are walking around, and we've done everything, and no one died, and everything's actually going really well. And now the music is playing, and we hear the of the car starting, and guess what? Performance goes off without a freaking hitch. Everybody's in their element. Everybody's hitting their marks. All the aerials go really great. It is cold. It is dark, and we are fine about that. And we are coming towards the end of the performance, which is going so well. And that's when I'm reminded of a note that was given early on. By the way, there will be fireworks, and we are dancing, and I'm thinking there will be fireworks. And we are just doing our part. And suddenly, as the song dies down and then ramps back up in that exact moment, the fireworks. Here's how I would describe the fireworks. If you have seen Apocalypse Now, it is not unlike the Robert Duvall napalm scene. It is sustained, fiery daytime amount of light going off with a tremendous explosion over and over again, all at once, from left to right, from outside to inside, from the top down. It is a fucking spectacle. And during this time, some dancers just like low-key black out, but that's fine because all of their partners just kept dancing. And so here we are staring at like Disneyland times 400 doing our performance, and everybody does it, and everyone hits their final pose, and everyone bows, and that's the fucking show.
Can I also mention, I feel like this is too many cooks, because you've got dancers, you've got the laser show of the Biltmore, and then you have the fireworks, which are where? Behind the audience. So just as the dancers are like, whoa, this is the swing out section, we're going to do air now, the audience is like, whoa, my God, there are fireworks.
Zero people are watching dancers for the last minute of our dance.
And like,
everybody's turn the fuck around, dude.
When people think of fireworks, you might be thinking of like the classic ones for 4th of July where you see it go high up in the air and it explodes in a thing. These are like fountain flash pot fireworks. It's like you're in the middle. Missy's, if you ever brain. Like the Lincoln Center garden, the Lincoln Center fountain, if you were in the middle and 3 inches tall and the Lincoln Center fountain was nothing but fire, it's just going. And it's this beautiful display of, you know, like it's timed to the music. It's doing all this really cool stuff, but it's all behind the audience compared to when they were watching us dance. And so 99% of that crowd turned around to watch the fireworks and stopped watching the rest of the dance performance, I would assume.
100%. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Brian was dancing all the way on the other side. Like, I'm on one edge, Brian's on the other side. He heard me let out an audible, oh my God!
Yeah. I didn't know there was fireworks until, like, we were getting ready to go out. Like, so we did, like, this is Saturday day, we're doing the damn thing, we've done the butler stuff, we get out, we're like, all right, hey, we're a little bit early, but we're gonna go do the car stuff, leaders, go to your cars, and so, yeah, Bobby and I are walking.
It was so cold, the audience didn't want to be outside, so everything was early.
And so Bobby and I are walking down to meet the other driver that we didn't get to meet the day before. and there's this guy that's like next to this, like the street on one side that we're walking down. He's like, hey, be careful over here, there's fireworks. So I'm like, for what? And he's like, well, you know, just watch out for the grass, because there's a lot of them, okay? If you could walk over there, that'd be great. And I was like, okay, cool, cool, cool.
He was not lying.
And I was like, what the heck? And so Jen was walking with us at that time to just, like, check in with the drivers and, like, make sure everything was all square and stuff. And so that was the first moment that I realized the fireworks were going to be a part of this show. And I think Bobby was as well.
Yeah, and you know, I run back to train with the dancers, and I mentioned it to Gabby, and I was like, by the way, I think there's going to be fireworks. And Gabby has this look of like, yeah, 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 as in like, oh, great, she knows I just missed that note. And then she turns to the dancers and says, by the way, apparently there's going to be fireworks.
It's great news for everybody.
Which I thought was a great, super dope. Great delivery.
Yep.
I love also, by the way, Gabby, you're like, okay, there are going to be fireworks as you're dancing. As soon as we started it, like when I'm shivering behind the bush, I'm like, there are going to be fireworks. As soon as I go out there dancing, that thought is not in my mind at all anymore. It's 100% gone.
Yeah.
I just remember finally when we took our bow, I just remember like looking up and finally the light, you know, the projector's not in the face. And I just, we're bowing to people's backs.
Everybody's turned around. Yeah.
They're all cheering and shit. Like,
but we still took that bow. Still took that bow.
But then we run in because like Adrian has to hurry up and like scamper up the tower because she's got to be like champagne beautiful girl. Champagne lady. And Rafal and I have to go back. I got to change into heels because we're going to be like the first dancers. Wahoo! After the wall falls down, stuff like that. And so like everybody's like, there's going to be time. It takes so long to get 160 people moving. Not if it's cold. Adrienne's like midway up the tower. She's got like a half a glove on. People are pouring in already. So she's just like, ah, ha, ha, I'm going to put on the glove sexy now. La, 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 la. Costume came in front of everybody.
And Adrienne had two left gloves, I think, too.
While we're walking back, when we're walking back for the thing, I'm actually next to one of the couples at the party, and they're like, "Hey, man, that was great. Are you guys local?" And I was like, "No, actually, we're from New York City." And the people who are throwing this party, let's just say they're the Jeffersons or whatever. The people we're walking next to this couple, and we say, "Oh, no, we're from New York City." And the guy looks at his wife, and he's like, "Ah, fucking Jeffersons." And I was like. he's like, oh yeah, well that's what happens when you have .com money meets a wife who loves to throw parties.
Yep.
Also,
and so I'm one of the people who helps Adrienne off of the champagne thing, and right as we're doing that, the host steps forward with the microphones. He's like, we know that someone here has been taking 10 years of accordion lessons, and they wheel out an accordion, and they force that person to go and play the accordion. The person picks it up and goes,
cannot.
This person is bad.
And he goes, that's what I got.
Mr. Jefferson has just ruined this person's night, right? Put him on the spot and forced him to play an instrument that he doesn't know in front of
159 other people. And this was like a long moment of this person trying to play the accordion too. It wasn't like a 30-second thing. It was like four or five minutes.
He's a famous person too. Like yes. Everybody knows him. So it's
early So what happened the previous day is they said, hey, we want people in the speakeasy to be dancing. And I thought to myself, you know, Laura and Rafal will be really quick dancers who will run from the performance space back to the speakeasy. They'll be so good to put as the first dancers, which they do because they're brilliant and they're fast runners in New York City. what happens is we never rehearse the moment of them being revealed. The revealing moment is that all the guests are like, just hanging out in this party tent, and suddenly a curtain drops and there's a big, quote, speakeasy area, which is like a bar area that has been decorated in a specific way. And these two sexy dancers are in the middle of a very exciting, coordinated routine. Now, what I say to my good, talented friends, Rafal and Laura, hey, can you guys put together like 4/8, 8/8 of material? And then, you know, the second you, and this is mostly like solo jazz, something like the Big Apple. And the second you guys get together, then everybody will come out and that will be like the, you know, the party explosion of the confetti gun going off. Great. Everything is great. We've got a plan. Everybody knows what they're doing. It is time for that to actually happen. And the one thing we didn't rehearse is the dropping of the curtain. Because as some of you can imagine, it takes a long time to reinstall that curtain. So what happens is the sweet and capable Laura and Rafal are standing there and the curtain is like on their side and the song goes on that this whole thing is supposed to happen to. And they're like, we'll just do Charleston Basics until it feels like it's the time. Not only do they do Charleston Basics for like, I don't know, a minute and a half, which is 3 hours when you're on stage.
Yep.
But they actually just go through the entire choreography of what they have prepared because we are getting to the end of this song. And then at the very, very end of what they have prepared, The curtain comes down. Very randomly, very unceremoniously catching the end of what they have. And then they're just kind of staring at each other. But being such professionals, Laura's like, you're going to dip me. And Rafal's like, oh, she's coming at me now. So Rafal saves Laura's life. Laura looks like a gem, like making a beautiful dance pose. The audience obviously cheers because they're like, whatever, they're two sexy people. And then the confetti cannon goes off and everybody jumps out and we are all performing and everybody is having the best time and all the dancers are laughing because we were just watching Rafal and Laura fucking tap dance and be like, is it now? Is it now? Is it now? Is it now? And yeah, that's what I saw. What did you guys see?
I thought something else was really fun. Like what was presented to us is like Gabby was saying, we have like some solo stuff and then we get together and partner dance and the music just keeps on going. Music keeps on going. It's party now. But instead we get to the end of the song, which is, by the way, the Will I Am song, like that's to the Charleston, like bam, 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 bam. And then he's like rapping over it and they're projecting the entire music video on the wall that's falling. So it's a cool idea, but I didn't realize they were going to do the entire music video before. And then after that song, the music stops. It doesn't roll into another song. And so Rafal and I just like keep on dancing for a second and then we slow down. And then I force my dip upon him, like Gabby said. But apparently Brian is beside somebody with a headset and he just hears the person say, no, no, now, now, no, now.
I remember my experience is I'd help Adrian down from the champagne and then I ran around to the speakeasy section and I just see Gabby across the way waving her hand being like, come. And I run over there next to her table and I sit down because we're clearly supposed to be acting and she says, so what's going to happen is, and that's when the wall just fell right down. And so she turns to the audience with this bright smile on her face and through her teeth, she's like, so as soon as they're done diffing, they're going to go out on a partnership dance and then they're going to go ask and dance with the rich people. Like,
yeah. While we were waiting in the back, I was walking past the DJ booth of the speakeasy where the confetti cannons are. And the DJ chick was super nice. She was like, hey, because I was standing there before we had sat down and where we were supposed to sit down. And she's like, hey, you don't want to stand too close to this. And I was like, what? She's like, they're really loud and like, it'll hit you. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, thank you so much.
Someone discovered cool. The projectiles at those events.
And it's dead ass. Like, it's like, if you're a Gabby or a Laura, like I'm 6'1 before there, like, it's whatever. Like, if you're any shorter, that's just in your face confetti. Good like, shot. Get as you're going to fall down. It's just like at half face level for a lot of people that are going to be near this DJ booth. So
that's murder at Party City. Like, you die.
Yes. Okay. Yes. 100%. It was like super not planned out, I don't think. And someone was just on either side of the DJ booth. They just had these massive cannons. Yeah. This is so great.
We do the social dancing with the rich people, and that goes off really well. And then we're supposed to like all kind of leave one by one as the music goes. And mm-hmm. we do that, and it's great. And we get back to our manger. And then Jen is like, we did it. And everybody's like, we did it. And Jen's like, does anybody want something sweet? Because they're serving cake. And we're like, yeah. And then Jen gets out this chocolate candy she got at a convenience store because these rich people aren't going to feed us.
I should pause and say it was really considerate that they bought treats for us at the end of it because we're not owed anything. We were given a staff meal and we got that staff meal. And it was really nice that on top of everything that somebody took out of their personal budget, enough sweet things to feed 12 dancers, three of whom are vegan. It was really mm-hmm. thoughtful and we aren't entitled to any of that.
But some part of me was like, he's rich people.
Another miracle on this night of many miracles is the previous day. Of course, we had the long rehearsal. Now we were given the staff meal and that worked out really well when we first arrived. But the rehearsal was going really long and the light crew had these pizzas. And of course they were cold and they were sitting around and we were about to leave and we were about to just head out for the evening. But I noticed the cold pizzas and I went up to the lighting crew and was like, are you guys going to eat these? And they said, no. And I said, can we have one? They said, yes.
And we made a meal. We made a like a mythological great, you know, hook, you know, scene feast out of cold pizzas, and we and all of the cheese-eating people were saving their crusts and feeding the sad vegans, and the vegans were so happy with their sad crusts, and we were, and it was of all the things we ate that weekend, I think that sometimes the cold pizza, the type 2 fun cold pizza, was really one of my favorite moments of the weekend because it was unexpected. And boy, did we the fuck need to eat that cold pizza.
Yeah.
Like a raccoon. It was perfect.
Dude,
it was it was kind of, it was technically their trash, you know?
Yeah. Oh, deadass. There was, I forgot who was talking. Some staff members were like gossiping while we were like getting changed and all that crazy stuff about like, did you hear? And there was like some whispers. Apparently, when one of the confetti cannons went off an additional time during the dance after we had already left, a guest straight up shit them pants on the dance floor. Like, spooked them so bad, shit themselves, and they had to like clear enough of it to go watch an episode that the staff people are talking about this happening at this event.
I mean, that's there with me with those fireworks, honestly.
Like, actual dookie on the ground, like...
There was an actual organic deposit. It actually happened.
Actual, yes, exactly.
Catch it with her computer.
There was this really surreal moment near the end of the event. So, like, a lot of the staff are there eating their dinner because they had been working the gig, and they're in their $40 butler costumes. And we're at the Biltmore, and some of them are British, and they're talking about the things, you know, they're talking about the person who just shat themselves and stuff. And it just seemed like an episode of Upstairs Downstairs. Like, it was such a British, like, you know, low, you know, the servants talking about the masters in their butler costumes. It was pretty weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were in Downton Abbey season 7. I have no idea how many seasons.
So I think that's the story, right? I think we kind of covered everything.
Yeah, it was that was it. We dropped them all off.
And that's what
we all lived happily ever after.
And that's what the world thinks swing dancers do.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, that is what commercial dancers do. It's more like swing dancers had to take your swing dancer to commercial work day. And mm-hmm. these kinds of events happen, you know, all the time, all over the world. And the world has a great appetite for jazz music and swing dancing and aerials and neo swing or electro swing. But a lot of times in the swing dance world, we're not necessarily putting ourselves in position to get that kind of work because not everybody wants that kind of work. I think we just told like a 2-hour story about how tumultuous and dramatic it was. So, but it was an adventure, and I'm so proud of this company and this body of work, which has been fueled by many, many bodies and many brains. And then also these specific 11 bodies and brains, these 12 dancers, because we got to get in the roller coaster and like go on this wild effing ride. And it was just a really great bonding experience for me and I think for everyone else. And that fireworks show, I don't think I'm ever going to forget.
Yeah. No, it was wild. But also, like, it's cool because, like, after all this is done, you know, like, I get everybody packed up in the van. We get back to the hotel. Gabby says, bring all your costume pieces back to my room at, like, 12:30 at night, and we're all there, and then everybody comes with their costume pieces and like all of their snackos that they have left over from their sweepstakes. We all just kind of had like a one last little hang just to celebrate it actually going down, and I think that was probably one of my favorite moments. Just like we had
people come in and out,
yeah,
like, kind of like the last episode of Lord of the Rings. Like, that you're in the bar and you're all just kind of sitting there quietly.
Yeah. What I love is that these 160 people got to be literally some of the best swing dancers in the entire world perform. So it is really cool. Gabby, I really love what you're talking about, like bringing this thing to the world, because we do this thing and we travel around the world and we have our little niche spots. But I think it is really amazing when you have opportunities to like gift this to people who may not have the opportunity to be around such amazing artists. So that's really cool.
This is something that Nathan doesn't do. Nathan was not on the gig because he had to like choose between all of the different things that people want Nathan for. I mean, for Nathan. But he was talking about gig life, and he said, this is like an amazing connection we have to original Lindy Hoppers, like the original Lindy Hoppers who were hired at these various gigs around the world and around New York. Like in Frankie's book, he said they were like the bottom of the totem pole. Like, I think he said like tap dancers were trash and Lindy Hoppers were below tap dancers. You know what I mean? So like, you know that they didn't get like a catered dinner and a green room with a floor. You know what I mean? Like they're getting a lot of the runaround like that we are, you know, and playing like the amazing parties that we are, or like the little strange back room. Is it a bar? Is it a church kind of party? You know what I mean? Like they're going through like living a lot of the same like confusing, bizarre stories that we get to whenever we do these confusing, bizarre gigs.
I think that there's such an amazing comparison also with like the butler's uniforms and like the fact that you were literally service staff for this event too, you know? So it is like, it's, yeah, I love that. I love that through line and that connection to history.
Maybe that's a good place to take a pause. I love Laura's insight as kind of as a sum up.
I borrowed Nathan's insight.
Yeah, well, but yeah, but it came to you because you felt that. But, you know, that's kind of what New York gigging is like, because, you know, like everybody came into New York, including myself. And before you experienced it, you were told what it was like from other people's testimony. And then you held on to that memory as you lived your life. And then as that memory just blossomed into Technicolor, because you're like, that's happening to me now. That's part of the like chain link, you know, ongoing living history of how we're like, in a way, history is like books and narratives and academic, but in another way, like history is just like little pieces of words and advice and stories and like worst gig ever stories. And it's just given from one generation to another. And then three or four generations go by and then you have a really powerful connection to someone who's like very far away from you, but is actually really close to you. Cause it's like, it's just like having heard that advice.